We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
From Illinois Public Media, this is the Afternoon Magazine. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Today we're going to peer into the history of forensic science in America and ask, when it comes to death investigation today, where are we? Do we always know with certainty why a death occurs? Our guest is a former medical examiner who is the author of Death Investigation in America, Coroners, Medical Examiners, and the Pursuit of Medical Certainty. His name is Dr. Jeffrey Jensen. His book, Death Investigation in America, focuses on efforts to replace lay coroners with physician medical examiners and the resistance to such a change from a number of interested parties. Along the way, he looks at some problematic death investigations, including those into the assassinations of President Kennedy and Robert Kennedy, and the police shooting in Chicago in 1969 that left two Black Panthers dead and four others wounded. Dr. Jeffrey Jensen is a board-certified forensic pathologist. He's a former Milwaukee County, Wisconsin medical examiner. He is currently the director of autopsy and forensic services at the University of Michigan. He received his MD in 1980 and a PhD in the history of science in 2007. Listeners, join the discussion with a phone call or by email. I look forward to your questions and comments. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Our toll-free number, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. And our email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. That's WILL-talk@illinois.edu. Jeffrey Jensen's book, Death Investigation in America, Coroners, Medical Examiners, and the Pursuit of Medical Certainty, is published by Harvard University Press. Dr. Jensen, good afternoon. Welcome.
Yeah, thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
Good to talk with you. So let's start with some very basic questions, some very basic information. What's the difference between a coroner and a medical examiner?
Well, a coroner is a position that was transported from England around the time of the colonies. And it's a administrative position, typically a non-physician, or in many cases it can be a physician, who is in charge with the administration of justice by investigation of deaths. The coroner is an elected official and typically organizes and oversees the investigation of a death, does not typically perform the autopsy themselves, but does fill out the death certificate. A medical examiner, on the other hand, in most instances, is a physician trained at medical school and has a medical degree, and they perform many of the administrative duties that the coroner does as far as overseeing investigations, talking with families, and signing death certificates. But in addition, in many major large cities, the medical examiner is a pathologist capable of performing their own autopsies and overseeing the overall investigation of the death. So a coroner, in essence, is an elected official, and a medical examiner is an appointed official performing many of the same duties.
Okay. And pathologists, is there a difference between a pathologist and a forensic pathologist?
Most pathologists are hospital-based pathologists, mm-hmm. and pathology is essentially the study of disease and injury. And most hospital pathologists are involved with examining tissue that comes out of the operating room, for example, diagnosing cancer, looking at biopsy specimens and determining whether there's a malignancy or a benign growth. They also run and supervise laboratories. For example, the laboratory testing for to see if somebody has a heart attack, or blood banking to see if there's abnormal antibodies in the blood. Forensic pathologists are pathologists that take an extra year of training in the field of forensic pathology, and it typically involves doing a large number of medical legal autopsies, discussing investigative cases with law enforcement and going out to crime scenes, as well as studying crime techniques and evaluating ballistics or guns, and having extra knowledge in the field of forensic science.
When and how was the coroner system established?
The coroner was a position that started in England in around the 12th century. And it was started by the king, who wanted to have a representation in at death scenes, and basically for his own remuneration, because he determined that if a death was a non-natural death, then the crown or the king would take possession of all the property. So in response to that, he would send his own person, the crowner or the coroner, out to the death scene to investigate the death. During those times, the sheriffs were, as we know, fairly powerful, and they controlled many aspects of the government in the rural areas, and so the king wanted to have his own representative there, and that's why he created the coroner.
Okay. And with the transplantation of the coroner to America, how was it transformed here on this side of the Atlantic?
Well, here it became, after the Revolution, it became involved in the political system. And rather than being appointed by, for example, a governor to serve for a specific number of years, the positions became elected, and they became part of the political machine, so to speak, of large cities that were developing in the 19th century. The coroner's position was a position that many young and aspiring politicians would attempt to gain access to the political party system through this the position of a coroner. So it was kind of a jumping-off point.
Okay. And when and how did the idea of the medical examiner come along?
Physicians during the 19th century became angry over the lack of involvement in death investigation and what they saw as some fairly blatant criminal activity on the part of coroners, for example, altering crime scenes or taking advantage of insurance claims. And they also felt that there should be more science in the field, and that autopsy should be more prevalent. There was, throughout the 19th century, there was a major conflict between medical examiners and coroners over that. But physicians eventually lost interest and really couldn't, they were embarrassed when they went to court and had to answer difficult questions by attorneys. And so they basically lost interest. It wasn't until 1877 when Massachusetts became the first state to have a medical examiner that physicians were actually re-engaged into the process.
Across the country, we have a mix of a coroner system and the medical examiner system. Why such a patchwork?
Well, our country is a federal system, and that means that each state has its own set of laws. The Constitution relegates the policing activities in which the coroner and medical examiner system comes under to the states. And so each state has its own legal system and statutes on how they investigate deaths. And this is typically within the each individual state constitution. So it's embedded within the actual creation of the states.
And is there a model state out there today that we could look at and say they've done it correctly?
Well, there's a number of different models. It's more like a patchwork of different systems that have evolved. Illinois, as you know, is predominantly a corner state with large metropolitan areas such as Cook County having a medical examiner system, but that only occurred as late as 1972. Other states, particularly along the eastern seaboard, because of their small size, are state medical examiner systems where the entire state is run out of one office and had typically by a trained physician with investigators that go out to crime scenes. And again, many of the states in the Midwest are a combination of coroner and medical examiner systems.
Yeah.
To say, you know, which system is best, you'd have to look at which is most efficient, which gets the, is involved in looking at research and really going beyond just the death investigation system. I would point to states like Florida, which has a district system. The state is so large it's broken up into approximately 18 different districts, and maybe even a larger state such as New Mexico that is run has a single state system, but is heavily involved in research and really has a very heavy influence in public health.
Okay. What led Chicago to the medical examiner system in 1972?
Well, you pointed that out in your introduction. There was a number of occasions throughout the 20th century where the local civic groups as well as politicians tried to change the coroner system or remove the coroner system from Cook County. There was a major effort in 1930s and then again in the early to mid-1950s, and the coroner basically was strong enough politically to hold on. It wasn't until 72, I'm sorry, when there was a Black Panther shootout, so to speak, where individuals were shot. The police went in and made statements that they had just entered the area, and then they were shot at, and so they returned fire. But after three autopsies and a number of investigations, it was determined that actually the police had entered the residence, had shot the individual. And it was able to be completely reconstructed. It was on the basis of this that the civic groups finally got enough support where they were able to overturn the system and create a medical examiner system in Cook County.
Yeah.
Dr. Stein was the first medical examiner in 1975.
That's really an interesting story. At this point, also this followed some other incidents in this era. In a chapter, you talk about the Black Panther Chicago police shootings, but you also write in this portion of the book about the assassination of John Kennedy and Robert Kennedy and what happened at Chappaquiddick. So all these things were in circulation, so to speak.
Right. There were a number of issues, and I point to the fact that a lot of medical examiners, although they had positions of responsibility, they didn't have a whole lot of authority when viewed by law enforcement and other political entities. For example, in the President Kennedy's body, after he died at Parkland Hospital, the Dallas medical examiner who had the legal jurisdiction to investigate the death and perform an autopsy was basically overwhelmed by the president's Secret Service staff that I guess you could say they stole the body and took it to Washington. And it was because the body was transported and because there was a disruption of the chain of custody that really caused a lot of the incredulous theories and difficulties in the interpretation of injuries to the president's body and the investigation of the death overall. And I think we're still involved in that because of the fact that the body was taken. In another example, I think you look at the Chappaquiddick incident, and in that case, there was a woman who died suddenly. She was Mary Jo Kopechne was found in the car. It was later learned that that Senator Kennedy was the driver. But in that instance, there was no investigation, and the body was released from the scene. There was no autopsy and no toxicology performed. And there, even though that there were a number of concerns around the case, the local medical examiner, who was at the time an obstetrician with two patients in labor, just simply didn't have the time or the experience to properly investigate that death. And again, a disruption of the scene, the chain of custody, caused a number of questions, and we're still working through those.
Yeah. In the case of any sudden, unexpected death, is an autopsy indicated?
Well, I actually feel that the autopsy starts at the scene, and so that's why scene investigation is so important. Typically, in any typical case, once law enforcement or some other entity is notified of a death, they are required to immediately notify the coroner or medical examiner. The medical examiner will then send an investigator to the scene to make what should be their own independent evaluation and investigation. We like to say that the medical examiner and coroner are responsible for the body, and the law enforcement is responsible for the overall scene. And as you can see, because of that, there is a negotiation that goes on as far as removing the body from the scene, taking evidence, and making opinions. Mm. The body is then transported to the medical examiner or coroner's office, where experienced individuals will take photographs, remove evidence, and then remove clothing, take additional photographs, and then only after that is an autopsy performed. And autopsies aren't really necessary in every case, but just cases where there's sudden unexpected death or where the medical history does not corroborate the findings of the scene, or especially in cases that are homicide accidents or suicides that are questionable.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon is Dr. Jeffrey Jensen. He's the author of Death Investigation in America, Coroners, Medical Examiners, and the Pursuit of Medical Certainty. Our guest is a former Milwaukee County, Wisconsin medical examiner. He's a board-certified forensic pathologist. He received his MD in 1980, his PhD in the history of science in 2007. He is currently the director of autopsy and forensic services at the University of Michigan. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, I invite you to join us this afternoon with questions, comments. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Or you can join us by email. Our email address, WILL-talk@illinois.edu. Well, let's go back and talk about the investigation into the death of President Kennedy. Who ultimately performed the autopsy on the president?
The body was transported to Washington, and because President Kennedy was in the Navy, his wife felt that that a Navy surgeon should perform the autopsy. And so two Navy pathologists who were regular hospital pathologists and did not have really any forensic experience were ordered to perform the autopsy. And they did so under some extreme conditions. There were a number of Secret Service agents present. There was not a lot of information that was able to be exchanged between the surgeons that had operated on the president at Parkland Hospital and the autopsy surgeons, which is really one of the important aspects of doing an autopsy, is getting the history ahead of time. And again, because they didn't have the information necessary in their experience, there were some mistakes during the course of the autopsy that, although that turned out later that the mistakes were somewhat rectified, they got the information right, it led to a large number of concerns about the validity of the entire process itself. I think it was the government's concern over the president's privacy, as well as just a lack of understanding of forensic theory and philosophy that caused the problems.
Yeah, because it's interesting to think, you note that Dallas County had a medical examiner who was a forensic pathologist. He was the guy that should have done the job.
And extremely capable, and it had seen thousands of gunshot wounds. And again, it's having the local person being able to control the scene, the evidence, the autopsy, and the situation, so that evidence doesn't get lost and that there's an open line of communication.
Yeah. Do you think it was a case merely of the Secret Service just thinking that it was the right thing to do to get the president's body to Washington?
No, I think it was just a matter of responding to requests and having the taking the authority to basically overwhelm, you know, local jurisdiction. Hmm. And at that time, there was no statutory or legal authority for the federal government to even investigate the deaths of presidents or high-level government officials. And that's been changed, basically, due to the Kennedy investigation.
How would it be handled today?
There is a separate group of forensic pathologists that are assigned and working with the federal government under the Armed Forces Institute, and these are trained and expert pathologists, and they would have jurisdiction over the body.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, Dr. Jeffrey Jensen, author of Death Investigation in America, Coroners, Medical Examiners, and the Pursuit of Medical Certainty. Well, let's talk a little bit now about the assassination of Robert Kennedy 4.5 years later. Los Angeles County had a medical examiner coroner, and he was determined, you write, not to repeat the mistakes of the investigation of John Kennedy's death. How did the investigation into Robert Kennedy's death play out?
Dr. Tom Noguchi was the medical examiner coroner at the time, and that title is interesting in that there was a coroner system there, but they wanted a medical examiner system, but they because of the strength of the law, they couldn't totally get rid of the word coroner, so they just applied the name medical examiner-coroner as the title. But Dr. Noguchi took control of the case, all aspects of the case, including the scene and the autopsy room, and he personally contacted and discussed the issue with the family. And even with those circumstances, the local district attorney was willing to simply let the body go again, and that could have been a major mistake and caused another long period of controversy. But Noguchi was able to talk the family into letting him perform an autopsy, in which he did. He spent, instead of a couple hours, he spent multiple hours working on the body. He did a reconstruction of the scene. He actually redressed the body with the clothing that was on Senator Kennedy at the time, so that he could be confident and sure of where the bullet paths were. He was Kennedy was struck by a number of bullets that did not actually penetrate his skin, so that was an important aspect of determining the range of fire and being able to answer any questions that came up later on in the investigation. And it was probably one of the model death investigations that has ever been performed.
Hmm. Do we have any idea how often law enforcement and politics interfere in an investigation?
I don't think we can really pinpoint that, other than to say that investigations are jeopardized on a number of levels. I think it's, as you pointed out before, I think many times it's well-meaning people trying to do the right thing. In other cases, it's people who don't have experience or are not properly trained to recognize a medical legal case or to actually make the proper decisions. I'm afraid to say in many cases there are autopsies that are either incomplete or that the interpretation is done without all the information present. And that can also jeopardize the outcome.
Are there standards for competency here?
Actually, the National Association of Medical Examiners is the leading agency program for medical examiners in this country. And medical examiners or forensic pathologists are board certified by the American Board of Pathology. And they're required to go through a year of training and take a standardized examination and actually get recertified on a regular basis. Also, in the National Association maintains an inspection and accreditation program, of which I'm involved in, that actually goes into medical examiner's office and inspects the office and makes sure that they're investigating the right cases and the right number of cases, and that they're following quality procedures. And actually, there has been recently developed a standard for a forensic autopsy.
You are a medical doctor and a board-certified forensic pathologist. What kind of a system would you like to see for investigations into death?
Well, more and more, I think we need to rely upon a system where we have experts available that is well-run administratively, and that we can utilize the findings that we have for to advance science and to provide support for public health. You asked me what I think would be the best system, and when we have these larger states, probably a regional system where you have regional centers of excellence with that are supplied by trained forensic pathologists working in groups with consultation that can have local jurisdictions transporting and sending difficult cases to them to do forensic analysis, and to be in an area where there is an academic center and high-quality drug testing laboratories that are available so that you can cover the entire complexity of the death investigation, the scene, the autopsy, the toxicology, and the administration. And so I would look at more of a regional system. And this regional system is starting to develop in a number of states.
Can you give us an example?
Well, for example, Michigan has an unofficial regional areas where there's trained forensic pathologists in various centers around the state. I mentioned that Florida has a legally delegated district regional system in which they have individual offices with multiple counties supplying cases to them. Actually, in Illinois, there's a unofficial regional system where rural counties transport and send their investigative cases to certain forensic pathologists that are located throughout the state.
I think that
a more formalized regional system would be something that we would be looking at.
Yeah. A moment ago you said with essentially a good, solid death investigation can advance science and promote public health. How? Would you talk about that?
Well, we were involved in the 1995 heat-related deaths that occurred, in, of course, in Chicago. But Milwaukee also had approximately 100 deaths, and this was, the same percentage that occurred in Cook County. And we were able to go out to those scenes and recover evidence and do drug testing so that we could identify that in some cases it was because individuals were on antidepressants and had mental disorders and were on medications that inhibited them from actually sweating and removing heat that caused their deaths. And we were able to take that information and start to educate our clinicians and our physicians on the on concerns about individuals who were on antidepressant medications during periods of hot weather. There's also cases where we've been able to do viral cultures and other tests on children and identify that they died from rare viral diseases that have propped up during the around the state, and we're able to recover that information and begin the process of looking and making sure that no other children died from viral infections.
Mm. You know, a number of our popular television programs feature pathologists and coroners and others who are involved in death investigations. Have they been taking up some of the issues that we've been talking about here today and making them palatable to us in terms of drama?
I point back to the Quincy show, and Quincy was basically a forensic pathologist who was working for a coroner, and the show did, I think, accurately depict some of the tension that occurred between the administrator and then the scientist who was trying to do the right thing. But many of the current shows, I think, are more fictitious in that the majority of cases we handle tend to be, fairly routine. Probably about 4 to 5 times a year we'll get something that is extremely difficult. But on the whole, it's not individuals that are making decisions. It's a system in an office that work together and individuals working together. And I think there's just too much Hollywood in some of the shows that we see.
What's the status, so to speak, today of forensic pathologists?
As a professional status?
Yeah, in terms of how you're seen by other medical doctors and how the public sees you?
Well, I think as far as medical doctors, and I mentioned this in the book, that even throughout the century, the organized medicine has really been reluctant to support forensic pathologists. They have essentially downplayed the importance of forensic pathology, basically insinuating that almost anybody could do the work. And they have they've not enforced the aspect that simply by being a pathologist doesn't make you a good forensic pathologist. And so that's been a difficult process and trying to educate our own medical groups on the importance of forensic pathology and the importance of forensic pathologists. I think at a local level, law enforcement and the individuals that we serve, the families we serve, they have a high recognition of the difficulty and the expertise of forensic pathologists. And I think they understand the difficulties of death investigation and also the human side of it, that that it's just not doing an autopsy, but it's following up with the families, and it's a whole aspect of doing of treating the dead and getting answers on a day-to-day basis. And so I think that most forensic pathologists are well thought of locally and with the people they work with, but it's still very difficult with our major organizations. And in fact, many politicians still don't recognize the importance of having a quality death investigation system until it's too late.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, Dr. Jeffrey Jensen. He is a forensic pathologist. He's the author of Death Investigation in America, Coroners, Medical Examiners, and the Pursuit of Medical Certainty. My name is Celeste Quinn. Let's take a call now from a listener in Urbana on line one. Hi.
Hi. I pulled off to use my cell phone, so I'll hang up after I ask my question. But if you were mentioning Quincy on television, if you're familiar with the work, I would like to get your take on the novels of Patricia Cornwell, who certainly comes across as being very knowledgeable, but I'd like to know how realistic that is. I'll hang up and listen.
Thank okay. You.
Well, I actually know the real Patricia Cornwell, and I know the real Dr. Kay Scarpetta. The Dr. Marcella Fierro is the forensic pathologist who Kay Scarpetta was modeled after, and I think that there is a lot of truth in that that persona, because of the strength that Dr. Fierro has been able to get across to the author Patricia Cornwell. So I think that there's a veracity, there's a validity of the person and the job that she's doing, but I think that the situations and the bizarre crimes that occur are a little unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. Do you folks get calls from people who are writing books or writing screenplays and saying, what do you think, doctor?
Actually, we do on a fairly regular basis. And I think people are, authors are trying to capture what really happens without, having firsthand knowledge. And, we try to help them when we can, but on certain things, we can't tell them something that doesn't happen.
Mm. Let's take another call. A listener in Champaign on line one. Hi.
Yes. Good afternoon. You spoke a little bit about the sometimes lack of status that medical examiners have. It's interesting to note that New Jersey is a state that has a medical examiner system and has for a long time. In Newark, the largest hospital in the city, to my knowledge, is named for a medical examiner, Harrison Martland. And he became famous, I think, in the 20s because, medical examiners examine more than just deaths. There were a number of cases of people who got sick that weren't seemingly connected with one another, one here, one there, mostly young women. And he took note of this, and he found out that at one time they all worked for a watch manufacturer, and they were painting radium dials on watches. And to sharpen their brushes, they put it in their mouth, you know, and so they got radium poisoning. And, that became a big public issue, and he became a famous man. As I say, the biggest hospital in Newark was named for him.
That's correct, and I'm glad you brought that up. I mentioned Dr. Martlin in my book mainly as the forefather of public health pathology. I mean, he was a major founder and groundbreaker for forensic pathology, but in addition, he was very much involved in giving information to the Atomic Energy Commission and really pushing the public health aspect of forensic pathology. And that's what we each do. I mean, we investigate work-related accidents and also accidents that are related to consumer products that may cause death. And so there's a real public health aspect of this, and Dr. Martlin was certainly the premier model for that in the early 30s, late 20s, early 30s.
Well, so you see, your tribe does get a certain amount of celebrity.
Yeah.
Good. Thank you.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. I do believe that some of these women that were in that business of painting watch dials, I believe some of them worked in Elgin, Illinois.
No, I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah. We're coming down on time. I've got a couple of questions that I want to get in before we wrap up. I guess the first one I'll ask, I've got two left. Talk a little bit about the role of the medical examiner, the forensic pathologist in the courtroom.
Well, the pathologist role is to be what I would consider to be an unbiased observer of truth, and that it's our role to communicate our findings in a way that the jury, who is the actual finder of fact, for the jury to understand our findings and to be able to make an informed decision. It's not really our role as forensic pathologists to win or lose a case, and I think that that's kind of a misconception that people have, that we get hired or we go into a situation in order to win a case. But our role is basically to first, document at the autopsy the findings. Second, to interpret them based on our experience and our training. And then third, to be able to transfer that information to the court. And we really can't be concerned with winning and losing, because if we do, then we lose our objectivity.
And the last question, you say in the book, Death Investigation in America, that in order to move to a system that employs science on the scene, medical examiners, forensic pathologists, you need the support of the public. Why has the public not embraced this idea?
Well, I think where they have, they've been very successful. I point out the issue in Miami, where a civic-minded woman was shocked to find that a person with a knife in their back was signed out as a suicide. And she started a movement that changed the death investigation system in Miami. And Miami, because of that, now has probably the best medical examiner system in the country, if not the world. And, you know, the same thing happened in Milwaukee, and we saw that in Cook County, and other places where the citizens stand up and say that they're no longer going to tolerate a political situation and that they want to get it fixed. It's no different than either fixing a road or a intersection where you get multiple deaths. I mean, it's the citizens have to stand up and demand to get the service. And in some areas where that isn't done, you have really medical examiner and death investigation systems that are broken.
Let's squeeze one more call in this afternoon, although it'd have to be really quick. A caller in Geneva, line 4. Hi.
Hey, how you doing? Good afternoon.
Yeah, go ahead. We don't have much time.
No, I was wondering, what would you suggest, how do you fix the problem? Because I hear a lot of people complaining lately, and nobody seems to come up with a great idea. You know, you know, there's a lot of problems out there. So, I mean, is there a better way? Is there, you know, can you come up with something that might, or a suggestion that might be better? I'll get off and listen. Thanks.
Yeah, I think what I mentioned it earlier is that you coalesce political and financial resources. You hire the best and most well-trained forensic pathologist you can find, and you insist on having standards and an accredited office that is inspected and runs as well as any certified laboratory or hospital in the country, and you don't accept anything less.
There we have to leave it. We're out of time. Dr. Jensen, thank you so much for talking with us this afternoon.
Thank you very much, Celeste. It's been my pleasure.
Dr. Jeffrey Jensen is the author of Death Investigation in America, Coroners, Medical Examiners, and the Pursuit of Medical Certainty. The book is published by the Harvard University Press.